Ihr seid bei Attitude, ein Musiker mit Haltung, stelle ich euch heute wieder vor. Und dieser Musiker ist kein Unbekannter, im Gegenteil. Er ist seit über 40 Jahren Sänger, Gitarrist und Songschreiber in einer bekannten englischen Band. Und ja, ich gebe zu, deren Fan ich auch schon seit Ewigkeiten bin. Ich rede von Justin Sullivan und seiner Band New Model Army. Gleich könnt ihr ihn dann hören. Jetzt wollte ich euch aber noch was anderes erzählen, eine Hausmitteilung sozusagen. Wenn ihr noch nichts vorhabt am 27. November und im Raum München wohnt, dann habt ihr die Chance, ein paar Bands live zu sehen im Bellevue de Monaco. Das ist ein Migrations- und Kulturzentrum von engagierten Münchnerinnen und Münchnern, vor allem für Geflüchtete. Das liegt in der Nähe vom Viktualienmarkt, ungefähr gegenüber von der Schrannenhalle. Ab 19 Uhr geht es dort los und dort spielen Bands, die alle irgendwas mit diesem Podcast zu tun haben. Marcanus spielt dort mit seinem Didgeridoo, über ihn hatte ich vor ein paar Monaten bereits eine Episode veröffentlicht. Dann spielt eine Band aus Nordschwabing, Gretes Töchter heißt sie. Da spielen eben nur Töchter mit und keine Brüder und dementsprechende Musik machen sie auch. Sie stehen ganz oben auf der Liste von Musikerinnen, die ich bald interviewen werde, wer weiß, vielleicht ja sogar für die Dezemberausgabe noch. Mal schauen. Wobei zugegeben, das Ganze findet ein bisschen im kleineren Rahmen statt, die ganze Sache. Zum Beispiel Marcanus tritt normalerweise auf, gemeinsam mit einer Tänzerin, auf die er dann allerdings verzichten wird, auch aus Raumgründen. Aber sei es drum, er spielt trotzdem. Und das müsst ihr euch anhören, das klingt einfach toll. Ja, und dann spielt auch noch meine Band dort. Meine Band heißt The March. Die meisten Bandmitglieder leben in meiner alten Heimat am Niederrhein. Aber nicht alle. Diejenigen, die es nach Süddeutschland verschlagen hat, werden dann am 27. in Bellevue spielen mit einem Akustikset, unterstützt von unserem Gitarristen vom Niederrhein, der extra dafür hier herunterfährt. Kommt gerne vorbei, Karten gibt es nicht, aber ihr könnt und sollt gerne dem Bellevue ein paar Cents da lassen, weil die einfach eine Arbeit machen, die viele Menschen brauchen. Näheres auf meiner Attitude-Facebook-Seite oder bei Instagram oder in den Shownotes auf meiner eigenen Seite atti-tune.de. So, und jetzt zurück zu Justin. In den späten 80ern, als ich noch zur Schule ging, damals hat mich die Texte geprägt, die Justin sang. In Bezug auf meine eigene Einstellung zu Politik und Gesellschaft. Ich habe natürlich Justin gleich zu Beginn unseres Gesprächs gefragt, wie wichtig er Haltung findet für Musikerinnen und Musiker. Hier seine Antwort.
Terribly important, I think. I think of all the punk was an important thing. Punk came to mean a form of music when you have to play four chords on electric guitar and shout a lot. But punk wasn't that. Punk was a cultural revolution which reaffirmed the idea that the spirit with which you do things and the spirit that you put across is more important than the technical side. So it was a cultural revolution right across all forms of art, painting and writing novels and poetry and music and everything. It was basically, there's no rules, it's about communicating spirit. And there are all the bands that came from that. There were some bands that kind of got stuck in a form. Although the idea of the form of punk, you know, this four chords and shout a lot, came much later. It was an early 80s thing, really. When it was really happening in the late 70s, it was about sweeping away the rules and about spirit. And I think all the musicians that came out of that took that, and we've all gone off in different directions. So we do what we do, and Andrew Eldritch invented the Sisters of Mercy, and Depeche Mode invented Depeche Mode, and Killing Joke invented Killing Joke, and The Cure invented The Cure, and all these kind of bands where there aren't any rules. Let's go, let's see where this journey takes us. And it also goes along with an idea that it's not a career. It's not about success, it's about doing something for the sake of doing it. And I think that many of us still got that kind of attitude. It protects us so that when people are, you know, obviously you're working in the music industry, so there's people that want to make money, And obviously you have to make a living. But when people start to point you in directions that you don't want to go, you go, no, I'm not doing that. And I remember New Model Army, everybody that's ever been in the band, including people that weren't born at the time of punk rock, have got this kind of attitude that it doesn't matter what they want, it matters what we want to do. And that's always the guiding principle. So I remember in the early 90s, we were kind of on the edge of being quite a big band, and it never happened. And often people say to me, what went wrong? And I can think of a lot of reasons we didn't become a really big band. But as for what went wrong, not much, because here we are in 2021 making music that we like with total freedom, and there's enough, the rent is paid and there's enough food in the fridge. And after that, you don't care. When musicians start, they talk about making it. You know, when we make it. And what you mean when you're a musician starting is you mean making a living from it. This is what you mean. That you don't have to have another job. You can make enough money from the music to support yourself. That is the big line to cross. You know, we crossed it in 1984 or something. And after that, it really doesn't matter about money and success and these kind of things. As long as there's enough money to make the next record and to continue a life in music, the rest of it doesn't matter. And I think that, you know, from what I've seen of big success and big money, it's 100% destructive. You know, I'm glad that it never happened to us.
Am Donnerstag, den 16. September 2021, habe ich Justin am Nachmittag getroffen im Backstage in München. Dort wird er später Solo spielen, jetzt aber noch nicht Zeit, also ihm ein paar Fragen zu stellen. Here we go. Erstmal hätte ich gerne gewusst, wie denn für ihn die ganze Corona-Zeit gewesen ist.
Great. The government lied to us. They say we're all in it together. But of course we're not, because if you live in a big house in the country and you've got a lovely garden and you're not worried about money, then the last 18 months has been heaven. And if you live on the 17th floor in an overcrowded apartment with people you don't love very much and you're worried about money, then it's been hell. Obviously people that have lost loved ones, including a member of the band. But for me it's been fine. I mean, beginning of the lockdown I found myself on a sofa with a guitar and just started writing. And then that turned into an album, and bit by, you know. But we were lucky that financially we were kind of okay, not to play for a year and a half or something. We did this one online gig that was kind of very successful, so we've been okay in that sense. And I love having the time just to daydream and go inside my own head. And explore stories and read books and listen to music. And how wonderful is that? So I think for a lot of people it's been fantastic, but obviously for a lot of people it hasn't been. I think it's been interesting though. I mean, everybody says, you know, what's going to change after Corona? And of course it's too early to say. We don't really know. But I think everybody has been changed by it. Because it's a new experience for everybody. And anyway, 18 months or 2 years or whatever it'll be, you know, that's quite a long time. So everybody changes in that time anyway. And people say, oh, I can't wait for it to go back to how it was before. I don't want it to go back to how it was before. And anyway, it won't. It'll be different. I mean, there's much bigger things happening in the world. You know, a perfect storm that we've created for ourselves. I mean, the way the world is organized by human beings is just ludicrous. It's just mad, you know. And plus, you know, the impending ecological disaster on all fronts is all coming. And then maybe this was like a little deep breath before it all comes. I don't know. It's been interesting. One thing, there were two things I liked about coronavirus. One was, it's a reminder to everybody that we share the planet with other things, including viruses. You know, everything has viruses. Trees have viruses. Wasps have viruses. Common as muck. And two, at the beginning of coronavirus, you know, there was this idea that, that key workers in certain areas of society have to keep working. And for the first and probably last time in history, there was a recognition that women that work on the checkouts in supermarkets and people that clean the hospital floors and the people that collect the rubbish are important people. Good, because they are. You know what I mean? But most of the time, these people are disregarded by society as being some sort of, you know, Untermensch or something, you know? And they're not. They're important people. And for a moment, they were recognised as such. These things I liked. And anyway, interesting. I think for everybody, everybody's also learned that time is a very liquid thing. So if you think about something that happened 2 years ago, you're not quite sure now if it happened 2 years, was it 3 years? Maybe it was 4 years, maybe it was 6 months. Not really sure when things happened, because time has kind of, our experience of time has changed quite a lot, I think.
In 2020, im ersten Lockdown, haben New Model Army etwas Ungewöhnliches gemacht. Sie haben auf ihrem neuesten Album einen Song, der nennt sich Where I Am. Als sie nicht live spielen konnten, haben sie dann die einzelnen Spuren von diesem Song zum Download auf ihre Webseite gelegt. Also eine Spur mit E-Gitarre, eine Spur mit Akustikgitarre, eine mit Justins Gesang, eine mit dem Background und so weiter. Die Fans waren eingeladen, sich selbst was zusammenzumischen oder eben andere Instrumente dazu zu spielen oder zu singen. Ich wollte wissen, wie sie denn auf diese Idee gekommen sind.
I can't remember how we got the idea. It seemed like a logical idea. You know, people, there are lots of people out there like making music. I think somebody said, why don't you try that? We like sort of creative ideas, particularly doing them once. So, you know, we did the Night of a Thousand Voices once. We don't have any plans to do it again. It was brilliant. We can't make it better than that. That one, the online gig, you know, everybody was doing lots of online gigs. We said, we're going to do it once and we're going to do it well. And we're going to do it in a special way, but we're only going to do it once. The orchestra gig that we meant to do last year, now we're doing it next year, we will do that once. It's good to do things like that. The last album, the From Here album, we had this amazing experience. We went to Norway, to this Norwegian island. In many ways, one of the happiest 9 days of my life. Plus 3 days getting there and 3 days getting back. So that was happy too. It was just an amazing experience. And we're already talking about the next New Model Army album. Would we go back there? No. Because it happens once. You can never repeat something quite.
Und haben Sie ein Feedback bekommen?
Yeah, we had lots and lots of mixes. Yeah, people sent us lots and lots and lots of mixes. Some people added things, some people took away things. There was some kind of just straight mixes of what was there. And then there was some kind of radical ones that were quite entertaining.
Haben Sie denn vor, das mal irgendwann zu veröffentlichen?
I think we were going to, and I think we forgot. So probably. And we're not very organized.
Justin hatte gerade eben mal deren Online-Gig erwähnt. Der fand im Herbst 2020 statt, also ungefähr zu der Zeit, wo sie auch auf Tour gewesen wären, wozu ich auch ein Ticket gehabt hätte, aber was allerdings eben verschoben wurde. Ich habe gefragt, was das für ein Gefühl war, dieses Konzert zu planen, zu organisieren, einmal dieses Konzert durchzuführen für alle Fans weltweit.
It was good actually. First of all, you know, in the middle of coronavirus, we all had lots of tests and everything, and we got together in a kind of group of, including everybody that was working on it, probably about 15 people. And in the middle of, to work on a project in a team of 15 people was lovely in the middle of that. And we talked about doing it. We said, okay, we will do it on the birthday of the band, once we know that we're not going to play this year and we're probably not going to play next year. So the 40th birthday of the band, yeah, we'll do a online gig, but we're only going to do it if it's really live, absolutely 100% live, and we will try and do it as well as we can. So we spent a bit of money trying to have some backdrops and moving backdrops, you know, something else to look at. And we always knew that we wouldn't do it like it was on a stage. So we'd sit up in a circle. So for us, it's natural, you know, like we rehearse.
Die Location sah tatsächlich irgendwie aus wie ein Proberaum.
Yeah, it was. It's actually the place we filmed. It was downstairs from where we rehearse. So it's in the same building. And so it was reasonably natural. But it was exciting in the sense we were very nervous because we knew it was live. You know, countdown. We're going live in 1.5 minutes. You know, tick, 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 tick. And of course we were nervous. And the other thing was that we did a little rehearsals. And then the camera team came down, and they were all kind of TV people, and they put the cameras on tripods, and they got perfect focus, and it was really boring. And we said, no, take the cameras off the tripods, move them around, film little things, film interesting things, the side view of the drummer, Michael especially, because no one ever sees what a drummer does, and Michael is an amazing drummer. So that side view of Michael, let's have lots of that. And we said, it doesn't matter if the camera people are in shot, we don't care. It doesn't matter if it's all a bit chaotic. So when there's a guitar solo, we know that the camera won't be pointing at the right guitar in the right moment. We don't care. It really doesn't matter. Just make something happen. Make something with some energy and spirit. And I think that's what we did.
Dann hatte Justin ein Solo-Album gemacht in der Zeit. Wie ist das entstanden, wollte ich wissen.
For the solo album, I just started writing. Somebody phoned me up at the beginning of the lockdown and said, you're going to make a solo album. And I went, no, I'm not. I have no intention of that. I didn't plan it at all. I just started writing because there wasn't much else to do. First month I was in my flat in Bradford, and then I went to my girlfriend's place in Paris and recorded a lot of stuff there. And I just started writing, and I think I wrote 17 songs, 16 of which are on the album. The other one didn't quite make it. And it's a terribly long album. But I just didn't want to throw away 5 songs, so because I don't plan to make another one anytime soon. So I just thought I'll let people do their own editing. It's very long, and there's a lot of material. And then I just recorded me and a guitar, and then quite quickly I got a little bit bored of that because, A, I'm not a good guitar player, but there's a strange thing when you listen to your own voice. It's like I don't see it. It's like a cat looking in a mirror. You don't see it because it's you. It's a strange sort of phenomenon. So I can never judge my own vocals. I always need producers to help me. But so I was bored of it quickly. So I sent it to all various friends around Europe. I said, can you put some cello on this? Can you put some harp on this? Some bass on this? You know. And last summer, every day was a bit like Christmas, where I was receiving an email attachment of a musical part by somebody. And then you always hope you like your presents. You unwrap your presents from the email and you go, oh, I hope I like it. And then you slide it into the track and you go, not sure. Or, oh, I love that, you know. And then at the very end of the process, I had quite a lot of stuff. And I always wanted to mix it with Lee, who mixed the last 3 New Mulami albums. And that when I finally got into the studio with Lee at the end of November last year, we had 3 ways to go. One was to take away most of the music and go back to singer, songwriter, man and guitar. 2, to take all the music we had and make something very sophisticated and modern and use all the studio tricks, that there are 1,000 studio tricks, to make something very clever and modern sounding. Or 3, to use quite a lot of what we had musically and make a very organic, simple singer-songwriter album with a very loud vocal and lots of interesting music. And in the end, we chose 3. I was sort of half interested in making something modern and sophisticated, but in the end, I think the material felt not like that. You know, they're just songs. It's just a singer-songwriter thing. Unfortunately, it should have come out last to the end of last year when I finished it. But mostly because of the queues in the vinyl factories, it didn't come out till May, the end of May, and now I'm touring it now, which is kind of crazy because at this moment nobody wants a singer-songwriter. They just want some rock and roll, you know, and I'm here I am doing this. So I'm aware of that, but, you know, it's okay. I like the record. I like the songs. I think there's some interesting songs on it. There's quite more autobiography than usual. You know, I did this... When I was 19, I left home. I did a trip around, hitchhiking around America. And, you know, that song 1975, really my memories of that. The year after that, I lived in Belfast for a year in the middle of the 70s, and that's in 28th of May, that story. And there's some, you know, personal stuff. But there's also just stories that interest me, like Amundsen and the one about MH370, which is a fascinating story, you know, the coming with me. I'm quite proud of that song. I think it's incredibly dark, but I think it's kind of a good song, really. And so just all these different stories. And the, most of the songs were about... There were either stories like that, or they were about places. So Sao Paulo, obviously a place. Unforgiven was written about Corsica. Belfast, written about Belfast. Or people. Songs like Stone and Heather or Akistan, these are people I know. Clean Horizon, these are people that are close to me and dear to me. And I kind of write their story. And they never seem to mind too much.
In Großbritannien im September diesen Jahres hatte ich das Gefühl, dass man dort viel mehr machen konnte und durfte als bei uns. Also die Festivals fanden wieder statt. Alles ging wieder ganz anders als bei uns, wo ja an Festivals noch gar nicht zu denken gewesen wäre. Wie fand Justin diese britische Freiheit in Anführungsstrichen?
The UK has decided to take a gamble. Whether it's a good gamble or not, we'll find out. I don't know. People ask me about, you know, what should the government do about this and other restrictions, right? I am not Professor Sullivan. I am not Dr. Sullivan. I'm not an expert about viruses. I can't tell you. They've taken a gamble. You know, it was quite interesting. Beautiful Days, there was kind of a pit with people doing what they do at New Model Army gigs, all taking their shirts off and throwing each other around in front of the stage. But I'm aware that a lot of people that would normally go in there didn't feel good about going in there. That's down to individuals. And I was being quite careful at that time just because I knew I was doing this tour. I didn't particularly want to get corona because I'd have to cancel the tour. But it was strange. The first one we did was Lakefest, and we were in the dressing room before we played, and it was like 18 months since we did a gig, really. And we were all saying how this is going to feel weird. And after 30 seconds, it didn't feel weird at all. It just felt completely normal. So we'll see. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen in the future exactly with corona. Like I say, I'm not a doctor. But I do tend to look at Spanish flu, which was a kind of two and a half year phenomenon. They had lockdowns. They had a lot of some of the similar course, but they didn't have a vaccine. And it was a 2.5 year sort of phenomenon, really, with 20 million deaths. And so far worldwide, I think this is 2.5. So maybe we'll, you know, because of the vaccine, we'll get out of the virus with less deaths. This is the hope, of course.
Dann wollte ich zur Band-History von New Model Army noch was wissen. Ich fand es faszinierend und nach meiner Einschätzung fast schon einzigartig, welche Fans der Band auf einer Tour von Gig zu Gig gefolgt sind. Ich selbst habe da nicht dazugehört, aber natürlich in den 90ern und auch in den 2000ern sind die bei NMA-Konzerten, so die Abkürzung, immer wieder aufgefallen. Justins frühere Lebensgefährtin und Coverdesignerin der Alben, Jules, hatte dazu mal einen Text geschrieben, der ist immer noch zu finden auf der Homepage der Band. Dort ist von einer Family die Rede, von einer Familie. Als ich Justin danach gefragt habe, antwortet er und sieht in diesem Phänomen, ja, so deute ich das mal, nichts wirklich Pathetisches.
We've sort of gathered together lots of different interesting people. And now they partly come to see us at gigs, but partly they come see each other. You know, it's like... We were once on. I've told this story a lot of times, but it illustrates a point. We were playing in Istanbul, and there was a woman on the same flight as us that we know really well. And I said, you've been to see us hundreds of times. Why on earth are you coming to see us again in Istanbul? And she said, I'm half coming to see you, she said. But the thing is, I can go to Istanbul as a tourist, and I can look at the Blue Mosque and be a tourist. But if I come to see my favourite band in Istanbul, I'm going to meet people from Istanbul, and it's their favourite band too. And immediately you have this kind of social network where people have something in common, often very different walks of life. You know, the people that follow Nimrod Amin are super educated, and some people that aren't educated. There are some people that have, you know, there are some different political persuasions, there are different ideas, but there is something in common. Once somebody said to me, I know who likes New Model Army. And I said, really? And they said, yes, I've worked it out. And I said, please tell me. And he said, basically intelligent people trying to work through a large amount of personal darkness. Okay.
Okay. I'm just thinking about myself, you know.
I'm sure you qualify. I mean, the thing is that the lyrically, there's ideas. There isn't an agenda. There isn't a political agenda. People think there is, like Chumbawamba or Billy Bragg or something, that it's about the political message. It's really not. You know, we've written songs from the point of view of people we don't even agree with. You know, like, start with fucking Vengeance. Going on, you know, My People Right or Wrong, written in the middle of the sort of Yugoslavian civil war. Do I agree with that idea? No, I don't. But is it interesting to write from the point of view of somebody that feels like that? Yes. One of the Chosen. When I was a teenager, I had some brief months where I went, it was in a few cults, religious cults. And I remember really that feeling of being right and everybody else is wrong. And we're special because we have this special knowledge that nobody else has. And you know, that it's an amazingly potent, powerful feeling. And I remember it. And I thought it was interesting to write about it. Do I agree with these people? No. But do I understand the emotions and the involved? It's interesting to write about it. So we never ever sort of set out to have an agenda. It's just writing songs which feel true. And they're only true for 1 minute, but that's, you know, like a love song. It's worth writing. And then musically, we've taken all these different forms of music, because everybody that's ever been in the band is into different things. And we make something out of what we all like, bringing all these different influences. And my first love is Northern Soul. There's tons of Northern Soul in Nimrod Lamy, but nobody's looking for it, so they don't see it. Everybody's into different things. And perhaps also this combination, which I've always loved in all art, which is kind of violence and beauty. So I've never really been interested in ugly art, where people say, I'm showing the ugliness of the world with this ugly art. And I'm going, okay, but what's the point? I think I like that kind of undercurrent of, because I feel it in the world, that strength and violence. Nature is strong and violent, but at the same time, it's beautiful. And that, you know, Van Gogh, you know, this combination of violence and beauty in a Van Gogh painting. I mean, it's not quite the same on a page when you see a print. If you see the real thing, which, you know, dotted around galleries everywhere, I just stand in front of it. It's like watching a punk band. It's so vibrant, you know.
Wenn Justin sagt, sie hätten keine Agenda, würde ich schon sagen, sie hätten eine Haltung, oder?
Yeah, it's an attitude, I suppose. I mean, we always do everything quite... That's the old punk thing. But even if it's a song like Marry the Sea, which is terribly kind of, you know, sweet and beautiful and quite very minimal, it's still got something very definite in it.
Im Rückblick auf die Bandgeschichte, New Model Army zeigte Definitivhaltung, zum Beispiel, was die Drogenpolitik betrifft. Oder heutzutage immer noch, was den Brexit betrifft.
Well, Brexit is an easy one. I mean, it's just fucking stupid, basically.
Ich wollte wissen, was er meint. Hat auch deren Haltung dafür gesorgt, dass die Fans ihnen so treu geblieben sind?
I'm sure that some of our fans voted Brexit. We're not involved in this modern thing of trying to make divisions between people. The opposite, we're trying to unite people. Let's talk about the things we all have in common. Let's not, you know. And Brexit there's not much to say about it really. Drugs, interesting subject. There are extreme anti-heroin in our early years. We had a bit of an extreme anti-heroin thing because where we lived, heroin became a very fashionable drug and became very, very cheap and swept through some of the areas we knew, a bit like a plague. And we had a sort of... And in rock and roll circles, it was kind of cool. And we were going, hold on, it's not that cool, you know. It doesn't really do much good. Over the years, actually, the one that I dislike the most is cocaine, because there's nothing more tedious than someone that thinks they're God, you know. It's like, and I think that's the in bands that is the most destructive. If you look at band breakups, at least half of them are fueled by cocaine. It's a divisive drug. Yeah, it makes you feel great, but it's divisive. So we always had a bit of a rule on in the Imperial Army: no Tories and no cocaine. I mean, if somebody from the crew is exhausted and they find some place where they have a shot of coke, a snort of coke somewhere, I don't really care. What I mean is, there's no culture of it on the bus or in the dressing room. We're not sitting there cutting up lines on the bus or the dressing room, because I think that destroys bands. It's not moral, it's just practical. It destroys bands.
Dann kam ich wieder auf die Fans, die ja zu jedem Konzert mitgereist sind, wie auf einem Urlaub eigentlich.
Yeah, but like I say, half the time they go and see each other. And it's a way of travelling in a kind of big community. It's fun, it's lovely.
Like a holiday, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. People take their holidays and follow the band.
Yeah,
still true. Still true. There's plenty of opportunities to create a real cult, but we're not really interested in that, because we know that when we play, there's 20% of the people in the concert are rabid fans that know the words to everything, and they go to multiple concerts, and it's a really big part of their life. There's another 80% that quite into New Model Army, good live band, enjoy seeing them once or every 2 years or something. We're one of the bands they like. Are we there to play to the 20%? No, not at all. Do we think the 20% are special? No. All 100%, all equal. And it's the same thing, like, this is a punk thing. I have never been able to do the big band thing, which you have to do, which is everybody say yeah, yeah, everybody clap. Can't do that. I don't want to tell the audience it's completely against my nature to tell the audience what to do. It's just wrong. But that's what the audience wants. To you know what I mean? But I'm sort of respectful of the people that are actually in the concert, and they're just at the back, and they've got their eyes closed, and they're just listening and feeling it. Do they want to be made to be drawn into the concert? Not necessarily. Maybe they're happy just like that. So, you know what I mean? I hate going to a concert being told how to behave. I'll react to the music the way I choose. So just respect, really. But I know that in order to do the big band thing, when you get into big venues, you feel compelled to do that. And that's another reason why we perhaps never became a big band. Don't want to do that. Doesn't feel right. Doesn't feel natural for us.
In dem Artikel, den Jules für die New Model Army Webseite geschrieben hatte, erwähnt Jules auch eine Army Bucket Collection. Da wollte ich auch von Justin wissen, was das eigentlich ist.
Yeah, sometimes, every now and again, we've done things where we've had a collection for something or other, for some particular cause, where we take a bucket around the audience and people put money in. That's what it means. So, Yeah, we've all sorts of different things we've collected for, actually.
You still do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes.
For which causes?
The last one was Extinction Rebellion, but I mean, all different things. Sometimes it's just little local things. Yeah, different things every now and again.
Dann wollte ich wissen, wie wichtig denn diese Hardcore-Fans für die Band, für den Erhalt der Band nach 42 Jahren noch sind. Justin ist auch da recht bescheiden.
Yeah, because that's it's a minority. It's a very small minority of our audience is made up of those people. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I guess we'd exist without them. I mean, sometimes we play in places where there aren't any of, you know, inverted commas, these people. You know, we go to South America or something, maybe one or two got some money and come to South America to see us, but mostly it's just local people, you know. That's fine. And I kind of like, sometimes, I remember when we played Wacken 3 years ago, and Wacken is always sold out months before, and we were playing it next year, sold out months before. Nobody knew we were playing, so there were none of our fans. And we played on the Thursday night in a tent before the kind of, just before the very beginning of the festival. There was only this one tent operating, 5,000 people in it. It was pouring with rain, so it was full. And we were kind of aware that's 5,000 metal fans that are not necessarily into what we do. They're mostly sheltering from the rain. They're there to see some music. Are they into, you know, what are they into? And I like that, you know, let's go up and do, we're New Malawi, we do what we do. If you like it, you like it. If you don't like it, it's not our problem. And then there's a kind of thing about, you know, what do metal fans like? Well, it's like the same question I get asked about living in Bradford. At the time of, especially, you know, is sort of in panic in the West about Islam, sort of 10 years ago. The people used to say to me, you live in a city with 100,000 Muslims. What do the Muslims think about whatever? Well, of course, the answer is there's 100,000 of them. They have 100,000 different opinions. They're all individuals. It's like, what do all the white people think about saying, well, that's a stupid question. Or somebody said, you know, Germany took in, you know, a lot of refugees from predominantly Syria a few years ago. You know, what's happened to them all? Well, you can't say, because there'll be lots of different stories. So, you know, hundreds of thousands of different stories. Some people have been very successful, they're very good here. Other people haven't been successful. They've not coped well with the move, with what maybe have happened to them before they arrived in Germany anyway, etc., etc. You know, all these different stories. And sometimes I talk to other front men, you know, or women, you know, people in the front of bands, and they always talk about the audience as if it's a single thing. I never really see it as a single thing. I think it's lots of different individuals with different backstories and different favourite songs and different needs from the music and different ways of responding to the music. And that's kind of how I feel about it, really.
Wenn ich aus Deutschland verfolge, was in Großbritannien stattfindet, kulturell im Bereich Musik und Kunst, habe ich das Gefühl, dass dort auch eine gewisse Szene existiert. Eine Szene, wo auch die Band The Levelers oder auch andere dazugehören. Auch New Model Army hätte ich dazu gezählt. Mein Eindruck ist, dass diese Szene auch eine laute Stimme in der britischen Gesellschaft hat. Was meint Justin dazu?
It's heard by a small number of people. I'm not counting. And obviously the majority of our audience is now over 50, which doesn't make them any less important. Or now they have children, they bring them to the gigs, and some young people love the band, but obviously the majority discovered us in the 80s and have grown up with us and so on. Are we important? Nobody's important. I mean, you know, nobody's important, really. I mean, the whole point about From Here album and going to Norway was to be in, to make an album about humility and about make an album about the big picture, not all the things that divide us, but, you know, just how insignificant we all are, really. And I don't really worry about it. The scene in England, there are a number of scenes in England, and it's like, we're a very strange band. I mean, next year, we're lining up our festivals for next year. And we're playing two Gothic festivals, one in England, one in Poland. We're playing two metal festivals, one in Germany, one in France. We're playing a hippie festival in Germany. We're playing a folk festival in the UK. I can't think of any other band that could play hippie, folk, metal and goth. Can you think of anybody else? I mean, it's kind of really strange. And we've always felt like we don't belong anywhere in any particular scene. We're ourselves. At the same time, we can play to anybody. And, you know, it's kind of like that.
Ein lustiges Detail. Justin trat in den 80ern mit dem Künstlernamen Slate the Leveler auf. Und später dann spielte seine Band mit den Levelers zusammen.
Well, the Levelers also came... there was this thing that we did in the late 80s where we... myself and Robert got very interested in folk. We both grew up with folk melodies. And so we started to introduce quite more folk stuff into New Model Army. And then... of course, the biggest band of that kind, really, in the 80s was the Pogues, who took Irish folk music and sort of punkified it in a way, in spirit. The Levelers came up as a kind of folk rock band, and they were very much... they supported us in the late 80s a couple of times, and they were very much doing kind of that thing. And particular Simon Friend, who only joined on their third album, he was actually a massive New Model Army Pogues fan. And he brought his own songs and his own values into that band. But then what happened was that we felt, after Impurity, there was this big wave about to break, of sort of folk rock. And we just felt that it felt like a cul-de-sac, you know. We would get stuck. And so after Impurity, we went, okay, we've kind of done that. Now let's make an American hard rock album. So we made The Love of Hope's Causes with no violins, and it's an American hard rock album, you know, with American production and much more influenced by grunge and stuff like that. You know, it's like... let's go somewhere else now. And a lot of the kind of folk rock people were terribly disappointed by that record because it wasn't what they expected. I think it's always good to do what people don't expect. And then you don't get stuck anywhere. I mean, the Levelers are okay, but they do... They do Leveling the Land sort of reunion sort of thing quite often because it's their most successful moment. And that's what makes the money and because people can relive their... But we always had this attitude that if there was a song that threatened to become bigger than the band, like Vengeance in England at the beginning, their 51st State, Vagabonds, we would stop playing it for 5 years. So the people that just wanted to hear their big favourite hit would go, oh, fuck this band, you know, they don't play what I want. I was playing a gig in Budapest about 4 years ago. And it was a good gig. And then this man came around afterwards and went, you didn't play your biggest hits. And I went, no. And he went, you deserve to go out of business. And I said, we're not a business. We're a band. You know, it's like... and again, another reason perhaps why we never became a big band, because we weren't going to give the audience necessarily what they wanted. I mean, I remember sort of Green and Grey. We got to the point of not feeling it anymore. You know, we played it a lot. So we said, stop playing that for a few years. And now we play it again sometimes. And I really love the song again. But you can kill a song by playing it too much. And we never wanted to do that. It's kind of dangerous.
Ein einfach spannender Mensch, der spannende Sachen erzählt und der bei allem irgendwie doch recht bescheiden bleibt, würde ich sagen, oder? Ich habe ihn übrigens schon mal ausgefragt. Damals war es aber noch nicht für einen Podcast, sondern für meine Magisterarbeit. Mein Thema war Rockmusiktexte in der Thatcher-Ära. Und auch dazu konnte Justin vieles Tolles erzählen. was ich anschließend wissenschaftlich verwerten konnte. Mal schauen, vielleicht gibt es ja irgendwann mal eine Attitude-Sonderepisode mit den alten Aufzeichnungen von damals, wenn ich sie noch finde. Das war Attitude, ein Musiker mit Haltung, durfte ich euch wieder vorstellen. Wenn ihr Fragen habt oder Verbesserungsvorschläge oder wenn ihr Musikerinnen vorschlagen wollt, die auch eine Episode verdient hätten, dann schreibt mir in die Kommentare auf meiner Attitude Facebook-Seite oder bei Instagram oder ihr schreibt mir ganz klassisch eine Mail an atti-tune@gmx.de. Bis dahin, bewahrt Haltung, stay attitude. Und wir sehen uns am 27. November im Bellevue de Monaco zum Konzert. Bis dann!